Come January, Jacksonville will be home to two freshman members of Congress. In a place where seniority matters, how will that affect this area? Good Tuesday morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And watch the show, Video on Demand, with our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, it's the end of an era for Jacksonville as Corrine Brown and Andrew Crenshaw leave the political stage. Get on the line now with your thoughts about that at 549-2937. Plus, September is Atrial Fibrillation Awareness Month. We'll hear about its dangers and the warning signs you need to look out for. Then later, a look at the science of beauty. All of that ahead. But first this hour, with the retirement of Andrew Crenshaw and the defeat of Corrine Brown, Jacksonville will have no seniority when the next Congress convenes in January. Much of the local state legislature will be newly elected as well. So here's a question. Could this lack of experience and clout affect the First Coast negatively? Stephen Baker is a professor of political science at Jacksonville University and has some thoughts about that. He joins us in studio. Dr. Baker, always great to see you.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here.
And here's our question to callers. Are you concerned that Northeast Florida won't be getting the needed federal support for local projects without seniority in Congress as Corrine Brown and Andrew Crenshaw depart the scene? What are your thoughts about this huge change for the area? No matter who wins the elections, although those outcomes are almost assured, but give us a call with your thoughts at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on Facebook. And there is still a general election, as both Al Lawson, who defeated Corrine Brown, and John Rutherford, former sheriff who won the Republican primary, will face opponents in November. Let's be very clear about that. Even though they are both favored to win the general elections, we will continue to follow the campaigns into the fall with giving fair voice to all of the candidates. Now, Dr. Baker, Corrine Brown leaving Congress under fire, Andrew Crenshaw being defeated, or rather retiring of his own volition. What a political sea change for Jacksonville. What were your thoughts on election night when you saw that happen?
It really will be, because we've been used to a great deal of stability in our congressional representation. Charlie Bennett had been here from 1949 until about 1993, and then Tilly Fowler from that point until 2001, Andrew Crenshaw from 2001 to the present. And with Corrine Brown, she had been representing the city since 1993. And so we haven't had very many people in that office. So part of the process is that as they get further along in their careers, they get more seniority and more power. And when they are replaced, that has consequences.
And that, of course, was Corrine Brown's slogan for many years, "I deliver for this region." She was renowned for having strong allies among local and regional Republicans because she was very good at getting taxpayer dollars returned to this district. And, of course, there were controversies associated with her tenure as she did go down to defeat. But as Al Lawson moves ahead to the general election, he will face a Republican, Glo Smith. Let's talk, though, a little bit about his candidacy and his challenges in Congress. And let's listen quickly as Al Lawson joined this program right before the election and outlined how he will approach the job. Here's Lawson.
Jacksonville is not going to lose any ground if Al Lawson goes to Congress. I know how to work across party lines. I've been able to do it for the last 20 years, and I know how to get along with members, and that's what you have to do in order to get along with members. There have been the last 16 years Republican governors when I was serving, and if you had to ask any of those governors today, they said they would tell you that I was able to work with them in order to get things done.
Can Al Lawson deliver on that promise?
Well, he does have a reputation for reaching across party lines, as actually Corrine Brown did as well. I mean, she was several times endorsed by the Republican mayors in her re-elections, which was very controversial at the time. But I would think that Al Lawson would also want to remember that Corrine Brown was noted for service delivery, because the members of Congress have constituent services for their community, also to represent them in Washington. And those are two distinct functions. And Corrine Brown had this special relationship with the people in her community, where they did feel quite well represented with services, particularly veterans. They found that when the government was very non-responsive in a bureaucratic way, she was the one who would go in there and break the logjam. And I would think that, that Al Lawson would be well advised to emphasize that in his development here, because he will be compared to her. And it would, if he doesn't have that same level of constituent services that she did, I think that would set him off on the wrong foot. But otherwise, I think he would be very well qualified to.
It's 549-2937 as we discuss the end of a political era in Northeast Florida. We will have no seniority in Congress after the fall November election, as whoever gets elected will be a freshman with just one voice among hundreds seeking clout, you know, preferential committee assignments and the like. We want your calls on this at 549-2937. So if Al Lawson is victorious in November, those will be some of his challenges. If former Sheriff John Rutherford is victorious in November, he will also face the same dynamic. What will be the challenge for him as he tries to succeed the retiring Ander Crenshaw? Crenshaw was known as a player with bipartisan support in Washington. Seniority is so important, and Rutherford will be starting. He'll go from leading an agency and being in charge to being just one of hundreds, if he's victorious, without that clout to just give orders and make things happen. How will that transition work?
I think that will be his biggest challenge, because he is used to being able to make commands and having things done. When you move from an executive position to a legislative one, there is a steep learning curve, and he will have a great deal of difficulty in recognizing that if he is the winner. Now, the role of seniority is not as significant as it used to be. In the past, seniority was the way in which you moved up the committee structure. Nowadays, there's a variety of other ways, particularly in the Republican Party. It's your ability to raise money for the re-elections that enables you to move up in the committee structure. And so Congress has changed quite a bit in the period in which both Ander Crenshaw and Corin Brown have been to Washington. Seniority does not play as large a role as it does, as it did in the past.
As it did in the past. And to be clear, Rutherford will face a general election challenge from Democrat David Bruderle and an NPA candidate, Gary Conis. Al Lawson will face Republican Glo Smith in the fall. That said, both CD4 and CD5 are, critics might say, quite gerrymandered to ensure that the Republican wins 4 and the Democrat wins 5. Even after the redistricting process for Congressional District 5, Dr. Baker, which Corin Brown fought, the district now goes west from Jacksonville to Tallahassee, but it still tilts toward Democratic voters.
Yes, they're
as 4 tilts toward Republicans.
Right, and DeSantis, that district too, which also overlaps this area, is very favorable towards Republicans. So the deck is stacked, that's for sure, although there still will be robust campaigns.
Yes, and we want your calls right now as we talk about the end of a political era in Northeast Florida. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. John on the South Side. Go ahead, John.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. My question has to do and relate to federal funding as to our waterways. Recently, the St. John's Riverkeeper dropped their state challenge to the deep dredge and has escalated that to the federal level. So with after the elections, with the waterways, I just see that we'll have probably more federal money coming into the area, but the allocation or the disbursement of it will be maybe not so much as the deepening of the port as the mitigation that could result.
Okay.
And also the let me just say this, that tomorrow there's a Waterways Commission meeting, and on the agenda is the activation of activity on our river. So anyway, I would just be curious to hear what those comments are.
Thanks for that. Dr. Baker.
Right. There will be it's always hard to separate the economic impact from the environmental one. And politicians are driven to bring more money to the district, and oftentimes that seems to overshadow their judgments about the wisdom of this. And this is something that we will be struggling with in Jacksonville, because deepening the port will have a very significant economic impact, but also environmental consequences. And this idea of transportation is another aspect that I think we have to keep track of. Jacksonville is located not only as a major port for the nation, but also as a railroad hub, mm-hmm. and the cross-section of two major federal highways, 10 and 95. We're one of the few cities with that. So transportation is an integral part of Jacksonville's economy. And the people with regard to Crenshaw and Brown in the past, they were very attentive to the transportation needs of the city. And I think they're going to focus on that as well as the military.
As well as the military.
I mean, those are the two big factors.
And one of the reasons they both were successful in getting reelected was they touted that expertise. The other side of the coin, though, is the argument that having somebody in office for a long time is not a good thing, that we need regular new blood going up to Washington. What are your thoughts about that argument?
Well, we do need new blood, but sometimes our goals for getting this new blood overcome our ability to get things done. We have a much higher turnover in Congress currently than we ever did in the past, and we get to see the dysfunction coming out of Washington, which is a direct consequence of that, because the experience, the ability to sit down and make deals, the notion that compromise is a necessary component seems to be lost. A lot of the newer people elected come with the expectation they're going to radically change. They run against Washington. So when they get there, they really try to reform it without any sort of goal of our version or perspective that compromise is necessary. And as a result, the parties have become more or less leaderless.
Leaderless, you said, yeah.
Leaderless, and that has enormous consequences. And the more that makes politics dysfunctional, the more demand there is for citizens to have new blood, the more new blood that comes in there, the more dysfunctional it becomes.
549-2937, we want your calls right now. Conrad on the north side. Hey, Conrad, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Two quick points. Having grown up in the shadow of the tallest man I can ever imagine being close to, Charlie Bennett, whole thing, this argument or this discussion about replacing people because of tenure, the man was in there 44 years and missed one vote. He was a war hero of World War II that returned, kept the military here. He fought to keep the military here and build it up the whole 44 years. He was in office when the southeast corner of the interstate highway system was based in our downtown area with the Jacksonville Expressway Authority with I-10 and 95 converging at the Warren Bridge. But when I was a kid, you could write him a letter and know you would get a written letter back. That was all the way through the military. I went through that with him. And then Tilly Fowler would not leave it alone. The Republicans had to have that seat. They forced him out. But I had something else in the other district that I would like to say something quickly about, and that is we have a boomerang effect with Mr. Lawson. Corrine may have had her faults, but this is like having somebody from Orlando elected to this seat in the old district that she had. We have somebody from Tallahassee who, how much in touch can he possibly be with Jacksonville, the river, the port dilemma, and so on? I heard him on your interview a week or two ago, and I've seen Little Page this weekend in the Times Union make the same mistake. They both have referenced the other port that would really like to have Jacksonville's business besides Savannah. Both of them named Charlotte. They'd have to build a multi-lock canal up to Charlotte in order for it to be a competitive port.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's how to touch the man.
All righty. And Conrad, thank you so much for all of those points. Steve Baker.
You brought up a couple of really interesting points. There's always that problem in the very large geographical districts as to where they grew up and who they actually represent.
Yeah.
I'm sure the people in Orlando were always a little bit disconcerted that Corrine Brown seemed to have a Jacksonville focus. But I'd also like to add, with regard to your comments about Charlie Bennett, is after he retired, I got to know him fairly well, because he would come to Jacksonville University and speak to the students on many, many occasions. And he would open up and talk about politics in a way that really related to them. Mm-hmm. And he was a genuinely good person who was a personal friend of all the presidents from Harry Truman up through Bill Clinton.
Hmm.
Able to talk about them in ways that I think really helped everybody understand them. But he always had this personal approach to things that that made him extremely popular.
That was a
and
lost,
very effective.
That was a lost era. Well, I mean, that, that's not how we see it today, is it?
That's true. And when we want, you know, we talk about term limits, he's sort of the argument against them.
The argument against it. What about Conrad's other point that Lawson is still an unknown quantity in Jacksonville? He's very much a Tallahassee guy, but his district now encompasses, if he wins, if he beats Close Smith, will encompass Jacksonville and Tallahassee.
Well, I think he'll learn to be more sensitive to the Jacksonville concerns than he has been in the past. Not that he's been insensitive, but I think he will recognize that if he wants to be reelected, he would have to represent the whole district. And Jacksonville is a major component of that district. So I think he will probably learn to be very responsive.
And it's the end of a political era in Northeast Florida as our two representatives in Congress leave the stage, one to retirement, one voted out of office as she faces legal troubles. What are your thoughts about what this means for the First Coast? 549-2937. David is in Ortega this morning. Hi, David.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
First comment is relative to that caller who just said Corrine Brown may have had her issues. I think that is an understatement of epic proportions. There's a lot of issues there. And with your guest, to imply that somehow new blood in Congress is a bad thing, I think Corrine Brown is a perfect example of what happens when you have people in Congress for 25 years and they believe they're impervious to rule and they think they can get away with anything they choose to do because somehow they've brought a few jobs back to the area. I take issue with that premise. I couldn't be more strongly opposed to having lifetime politicians in Washington. I believe that we do need to clean up Washington, and I look forward to Mr. Lawson running in the next in the general election.
Thanks, David. Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Tyler saying much the same. Corrine Brown consistently embarrassed our region, even against the already embarrassing backdrop of the current state of federal legislative politics. She stood out as a beacon of ignorance and farce. Almost anything at this point would be a step up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a double-edged sword. Whenever you say it's either a good idea or a bad idea to have term limits, there are all these caveats in there. And the permanent residency in Washington for members of Congress is generally not a very good idea. I mean, I think the callers are and the viewers are quite correct in observing that. But by the same token, we do lose a lot of experience every time we have these turnovers. So it's a balance.
And this is a turnover of not just one, but both.
Right.
Here is Gregory emailing the show. I don't agree. The dysfunction is part of the nepotism that causes our political system to perpetuate tenure over advocating for the constituents. Lots of calls. The number to call us right now, 549-2937. Nell is in St. Augustine. Hi, Nell. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. One of the things I'd like to see, it seems that the media is already crowning John Rutherford as the next representative in District 4. We still have, 50-odd days before the election, and very often some of the things that happen is that depending on how the presidential candidates are doing at the time can impact the down tickets. In terms of their relationship to the presidential candidate and any misfalls that happen to come with that. But District 4 now comes into about three-quarters of St. Johns County, so I don't think John Rutherford knows St. Johns County in the way that he might know Jacksonville. And we are just hoping that even though the candidates are all from Jacksonville, that they will at least look to the issues that are very, very important to St. Johns County and to at least, as you move forward, to give Dave Bruderle the equal time that John Rutherford seems to be getting prior to the election on November the 8th.
Thanks, Nell. And let's be clear, the districts that we're talking about, even though District 5 was redrawn, they are, as you said, Steve Baker, the deck is stacked. the Fair Districts movement in this state was an effort to have a more level playing field so that one district wasn't overwhelmingly Republican or overwhelmingly Democratic. We don't really have that still in this part of the state. Now, Rutherford will face a Democrat, David Bruderle, and an NPA candidate, Gary Conas. We will make every effort now, in fact, we've already done so, to host all of the candidates that will be on the ballot in November. We will work very hard at making sure everybody gets a fair platform. Now, that said, Steve Baker, the Fair Districts process, the redistricting process in this state was fraught with dysfunction, finger-pointing, lawsuits, counter-lawsuits. It was just an unbelievable fight, blood sport. They always say redistricting is blood sport. And let's talk about how that is affecting the outcomes of these races in the fall.
Well, it won't affect the outcome of the Northeast Florida races that much, but it will affect the state Senate allocations, because currently the Democrats or the Republicans have a majority in the state Senate of 26 to 14. And several of the districts have been redrawn in a way that will eventually probably benefit the Democrats in four of those districts. But even if they should win all four of those districts, they still would be the minority. Mm-hmm. And so you've got that going for you. You've also got the idea that generally in presidential election years, you have a higher level of turnout of both parties. For the Republicans, there is a small increase in turnout. For the Democrats, there's a large increase in turnout. As a result, Democratic candidates tend to do better in presidential election years than off years like 2014 or 2018. However, the Republicans have a lot more money coming into this, and many of these down-ballot issues, roles, are going to be solved by greater visibility. And the more money you have for a campaign, the more visibility you'll have. So the Republicans go into this with much more money than the Democrats. The Democrats go into it with that this is their best year as far as presidential election years, as far as getting their voters turned out. And the Democrats do have a slightly better chance of winning in the state Senate races.
Mm-hmm. And so whoever is victorious in November, what do you think will be the immediate impact next year when we have new faces representing us?
Well, I think there is bound to be a learning curve here, and that we probably won't recognize things too much because a lot of the institutional aspects are at work here. I would think that the new people coming into Washington and to Tallahassee would want to work with the staffs of the people who are already there and would want to familiarize themselves with the issues there, and that they would talk to the person that they're replacing. I mean, even if it is, you know, a person they've defeated, it really is worth their while to develop a relationship with them and to put aside their personal differences. I think that would be a very key issue for all of them.
Always good to get your insights. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Stephen Baker, professor, it is emeritus now,
yes.
At Jacksonville University. And we will be coming right back with much more still ahead on the show. But right now, here is how you can support WJCT.
And you can show your support for First Coast Connect and all the programs you enjoy here by giving us a call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. I'm Kevin Mershart, producer for First Coast Connect. If you enjoyed that conversation talking about the changes that are coming to Jacksonville with our new members of Congress coming in and how that could affect us, then by all means, that's the kind of programming we're able to bring you, a conversation not everyone gets to, but we're able to bring it to you. So give us a call right now at 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. And don't forget, become a sustainer, $10 a month or $120 as a one-time gift, and we will send you a wonderful little stainless steel water bottle that you can carry around town. It's got the WJCT logo. It says thank you. You can do your part. That's just become a sustainer, $10 a month. Stick that on your credit card and don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, you're doing your part. We have raised over $8,000 now with this drive. We've cleared the $8,100 mark. We need to raise $72,000 by the close of business on Friday, so we need your help right now. We're a little behind. Make that call, 353-9528, and thank you very much for your support.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Quilt Fest of Jacksonville presents All That Stash, 400 quilts, 70 vendors, silent auction, and a Quilters Walk raffle. Seven Sister Guilds quilts will also be raffled Thursday through Saturday at the Prime Osborne. More at QuiltFestJax.com.
Jacksonville Farmers Market, offering local produce, ethnic specialty, and exotic food items, retail and wholesale to the public. Open every day of the year, dawn to dusk. Restaurant on premises. Jacksonville Farmers Market. Information at JacksFarmersMarket.com.
On the next episode of Hometown, the Tales program matches together local shelter dogs and inmates for training and rehabilitation. WeCares, Beach's health and wellness program, partners with local organizations to provide social and medical services to people in need. Family Foundation's 1000 and 1000 program develops personalized strategies to help the working poor escape poverty. And local musician Monique Cancera performs her song, Nowhere to Go. Hometown, Thursday night at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
Sponsored in part by Downtown Investment Authority.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First are proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Welcome back. Well, it affects an estimated 3 million Americans. Atrial fibrillation is the most common type of heart arrhythmia and a leading cause of stroke in this country. Now, although the exact cause of AFib, as it's called, is difficult to determine, doctors know there are risk factors like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, alcohol abuse, and other issues like sleep apnea. What's not discussed a whole lot is that family genetics are also important to look at when you're diagnosing AFib. Dr. Anthony Magnano, co-director of St. Vincent's Atrial Fibrillation Institute, is here to share the warning signs of AFib, with an emphasis on that family connection. And, Dr., September is the National Awareness Month for this, so thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. It's a privilege to be here with you today.
Now, let's begin by defining what AFib, which is easier to say than atrial fibrillation.
It is.
What is AFib?
Okay. So atrial fibrillation is the most common sustained heart arrhythmia. It affects about 3 million Americans, or about 1% or 2% of the population. And that rate really increases over time and with age. So it's uncommon under 40. It becomes a little bit more common in the 40s and 50s. By the time you reach 60, maybe about 2% of people have it. At about 65, it's up to about 6% of people. When you get to 80, maybe 15% of people are having atrial fibrillation. And I think the more you look at their rhythm and the more you record it, the more you might find episodes. So, and what it is that the heart's beating in the top chambers, the sinus node is the inborn pacemaker that we have in our heart that tells our heart to beat slower when we sleep, faster when we exercise. It keeps our heart regular and it keeps the rhythm regular. And if that gets overtaken by rapid impulses, the whole atrium or top two chambers of the heart can actually kind of quiver or fibrillate together. That makes the bottom pumping chambers beat quicker and irregularly. And it also can cause clots to form in the top of the heart that's quivering and not actually flushing blood through like normal. So that's pretty much what atrial fibrillation is.
And to be clear, AFib can be caused by a lot of things, but some of them include choices within our control. Alcohol abuse and poor diet that might lead to diabetes and obesity. Those can up your risk factors, but those aren't the only risk factors.
Right. So I like to think about a few things about the atria. First of all, if you stretch it, it gets injured, and it has to replace with fibrous tissue. Like anything in the body, it replaces with scar tissue, perhaps, rather than healthy heart tissue if it gets stretched. So I think about the things that stretch our atrium out. High blood pressure. It's like a water balloon, right? So the heart stretches when the pressure goes up in it. If a valve is leaky or narrowed, it puts a high pressure load and stretches that atrium out, or if you had congestive heart failure. Other things give it a more of a metabolic stress. So we might think about obesity and the fat that grows grows actually on the outer layer of the heart and actually exerts a metabolic influence on the heart. Or we think about diabetes with high glucose and abnormal blood chemistries and insulin levels that go with diabetes. We think about some thyroid disease, which can actually stimulate the heart to fire a little bit quicker, especially hyperthyroidism. And then alcohol is another key toxin that, you know, the higher the level, the more AFib you'll see. And at binge drinking levels or alcoholism levels, atrial fibrillation becomes really, really prevalent. And just one last thing I'll mention is nervous system overload. So the body has a background nervous system. The brakes nervous system is called parasympathetic. The gas pedal is called sympathetic, like the fight or flight response, right? One is for fear, one is for sleep. And when you have sleep apnea, both of those activations, both of those systems of nervous system can be activated simultaneously and put a lot of strain on the heart that can actually put animals in AFib when we study that type of model. So we think about all those risk factors.
A lot of them. Now, let's talk about genetics. You recently treated a couple of brothers in St. Augustine who both developed AFib. How did that play out?
Right. So we actually treated, you know, it kind of highlights the family history, but we had one come in his earlier 50s with a persistent form of atrial fibrillation. In other words, it had to be shocked or cardioverted for it to be interrupted. It wouldn't stop on its own. We did a catheter ablation about 5 years ago, and it's really been a great response, and the patient hasn't experienced any more episodes. And then the peculiar thing was that the father had atrial fibrillation, and now the older brother came in about 4 or 5 years after the younger brother, actually. So the younger brother was affected first. And we went ahead and this was a different pattern of AFib where it was intermittent. It was occurring in episodes. It would start and then it would stop spontaneously. So we call that paroxysmal atrial fibrillation is our fancy word for it. But it's paroxysms. It occurs in episodes that start and stop on their own. And that one we also treated with an ablation. The first, though, we used a heating ablation, whereas the second we used a freezing ablation. So two different techniques.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about AFib Awareness Month. That's atrial fibrillation, the most common type of heart arrhythmia, a leading cause of stroke. Obviously, you recommend living a heart-healthy lifestyle, doctor. Exercise, less alcohol, a heart-healthy diet, managing your high blood pressure. What other advice do you have for people that might be getting symptoms that could or cannot be this, and they have further questions for you?
Right. So the symptoms you want to watch out for that could be AFib, I always think it's good for people to get used to checking their pulse. And you know what it feels like when it's normal. It's regular. You feel the heart beating. You can feel it in your wrist or your neck, among other places. But those are the most common areas to detect it. And if someone has AFib, many will just feel it right away, that their heart is beating really rapidly and irregularly and chaotically in their chest, and they have palpitations. They might get with it chest discomfort, weakness, shortness of breath, fatigue. In other patients, it's much more subtle. They don't feel that sense in the heart of beating at all, yet their heart rate may be 150 or 160 or more. It's incredible. But they often do, if you press them, feel run down and they can't exercise and exert like normal. So that's kind of the symptom to watch out for. And if you have those, definitely you should get an electrocardiogram or a heart monitor in the case that it's intermittent.
Good advice. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
He's Dr. Anthony Magnano, co-director of St. Vincent's Atrial Fibrillation Institute. And we'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, prospects for a ceasefire in Syria and the delivery of humanitarian aid, but the new agreement between the U.S. and Russia may mean for the war in Syria, and questions about cooperation from the government and leading rebel forces.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
WJCT is a community-supported station, and your contribution helps programs like our radio reading service for those who are visually impaired or have difficulty handling printed materials. If you'd like to specifically help radio reading, denote that on your check and send it to us at WJCT 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. And thanks for helping us give voice to the printed word.
WJCT presents Amy Bugle, our 2016 American Graduate Champion of the First Coast, dedicated to mentoring our youth.
Back in the mid-80s, I started teaching as a special education teacher. So many of our families were unable to work or go to school because they could not find child care.
To hear more stories of champions, watch American Graduate Day on WJCT, Saturday, September 17th at 1 p.m.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it is an emerging field in medicine and very big business, both globally and right here on the First Coast. Aesthetic medicine. Now, that means everything from tattoo removal to intimate wellness treatments and a whole lot more. Dr. Konika Shellen is founder of the CMA Center for Aesthetic Medicine and joins us now with more about the science of beauty. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. You're a pioneer in this field and in research work on aesthetic medicine. And when I heard that term, aesthetic medicine, I thought, well, that must be plastic surgery. But no, it's not that necessarily. It's a big umbrella that you work under. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, aesthetic medicine is just as you said, it's a big umbrella. It can involve plastic surgery, but more and more patients are finding that they want to look their best and feel their most confident and kind of take the mask of aging off so that their true inner self can shine through. And they want to do it in ways that allow them to get back to their daily routines quickly. So a lot of this encompasses non-invasive technologies, laser medicine, injectable medicine.
Let's talk about the laser technology, because you use that at your center for everything from scars, port wine stains, removal of tattoos. That's pretty incredible. The technology is as advanced to the point now, I guess, that there's a lot more that's possible than there used to be. Is that right?
It is. It's advancing every day, and it's a very exciting and very elegant technology. It was originally a number of years ago applied to medicine with port wine stains and hemangiomas, and has done some incredible work. Pulse dye lasers around the world in terms of improving port wine stains and hemangiomas. But from that, the technology has evolved to include multiple different wavelengths, multiple different lights. And what it essentially does is boil down heat. And as heat's applied to tissue, it creates changes in the tissue. So it's energy that creates changes in the tissue to stimulate collagen, to stimulate changes in our extracellular matrix and improve the appearance of the skin.
This has simply exploded as a choice for patients in recent years. What's the difference between 10 years ago and today when you look at the growth of this?
Well, we have more and more options available for all skin types now. That's a big change. There are also laser technologies that allow people to return to work very quickly without having extended periods of downtime. CO2 technology in particular has changed quite a bit. Initially, it used to be an excellent technology, but required even hospitalization to have a big treatment. And with the advents of being able to fractionate the CO2 beam and create fractional treatments, it's allowed tissue to heal so much more quickly so that we can actually apply energy to very deep levels of the skin and create real change without this kind of downtime.
What's the most common patient that you're seeing?
You know, we see patients of all types. We see younger patients that are interested in things like hair removal or tattoo removal. And we see older patients as well who are interested in a variety of procedures that are more for significant correction, significant aesthetic changes. And really, there's a spectrum.
How much of this is driven in particular among older patients, as you said, behind a desire to look younger and maybe remain more viable in the workforce?
I think that there's a huge component of that. But I think that what I find my patients tell me, especially ones that are new to trying some of these technologies, is that there was a certain hesitation. There was a certain hesitation to do this. And then once they went ahead and tried a procedure, they found that it improved how they felt about themselves so much. It improved their confidence so much, and that it liberates them to just be more themselves.
Now, this Saturday, WJCT's annual Girls' Day Out will be taking place at the Downtown Hyatt. The science of beauty, aesthetic medicine is on the agenda. I don't think you're speaking, but I do think that it is part of the day. I believe so, right? And some of your patients will be there.
Absolutely. It's really exciting what my team has put together there. And Corey Pujadas is the nurse practitioner at CMA, and she is putting together a program along with Janice Gendreau, who will be speaking. And it's titled Up Close and Very, Very Personal. And it's a project that I'm involved with that really is important, because what it does is it talks about how laser technology is applied to tissue, not just on the face, but also on the body, and what it does to promote women's intimate wellness. And what that means is changes that women go through postpartum, whether they be stress urinary incontinence related or laxity related, or changes that women are experiencing postmenopause. And there's a large number of women that experience these changes, and it's something that we don't really talk about or think that there are options available for.
Right. Hundreds of millions of women affected by this. And this is something that you can learn about this Saturday at our Girls' Day Out event. Still time to get your tickets. We like to make that plug. Just go to wjct.org/girlsdayout and get your ticket. But so if people are just hearing about this and they think that they're not really a candidate, what would you say to them? Maybe they can't think they can't afford it, or what if it's painful, or I'm sure you get all those questions all the time.
Absolutely. Well, what's interesting is there's been a large study done called the REVIVE study out of Case Western that interviewed nearly 4,000 women. And what they found was that more than 50% of women who are postmenopausal had symptoms of what is called the genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is a discomfort in this region with a variety of symptoms like urinary incontinence and dryness and itching. And of those women, a quarter, they found that it affected the activities of daily living and really important changes in their lives. So they're in good company if people think that they're not, that they're possibly a candidate. They should come talk to us.
Very fascinating. It's The Science of Beauty with Dr. Kanika Shallon, founder of the CMA Center for Aesthetic Medicine. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchuk. Never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And watch the show with video on demand at our partner, TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, what the new agreement between the U.S. and Russia may mean for the war in Syria, and questions about cooperation from the government and leading rebel forces. That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Right now, here's how you can support this program and everything we do here at WJCT. Here's how.
All you need to do is pick up that phone and give us a call to show your support for First Coast Connect and all the programs you enjoy here at WJCT. The number is 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. As you just heard, I'm producer Kevin Mershart, producer of First Coast Connect, and joining me in the studio is reporter Ryan Bank.
How's it going, everyone? I really, really can't stress enough how important programs are like First Coast Connect, but I don't have to tell you that. You already know. This is why you're listening right now. You get the most up-to-date news and information on the First Coast. We have interviews with local artists, interviews with musicians, interviews with politicians, doctors, and every issue across the map is covered. And if you want to hear more of that, please give us a call at 904-353-9528 or go online to wjct.org/thank you. Become a sustaining member. Put $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you can. set it and forget it, and you'll feel a lot better about it. You'll feel less guilty listening to all of the great local and national programming here on WJCT.
Indeed, and as you know, I used to be here a long time ago, went away for a while, came back to produce First Coast Connect, and it's one thing I always really enjoyed is the importance of First Coast Connect to this community. It's been a while now that the show's been on the air here, and the listenership just keeps going up, and the information gets better. And we have we win a stack of awards both locally and nationally about the importance of this show and how much people enjoy it. Well, that's made possible because of listeners like you. There's not a lot of places around the country even, places of public radio stations that are able to provide you programs like this. And the only way we're able to provide you a program like First Coast Connect or even Morning Edition and All Things Considered and all the other programs you and like, the ones on the weekend like Wait, Don't Tell Me, all of that is made possible because of listeners showing your financial support. We are over the $8,000. We're $8,100 so far for this drive, but we need to raise $72,000 by the end of business Friday. At 6 p.m. Friday, we're going to be done, and we'd like to make sure we reach that goal so we can always bring you great programs like this one. And that's only going to happen if you call in and make your pledge. How about become a sustainer? $10 a month. We'll send you a nice stainless steel water bottle with our logo on it. It's a little thank you gift to you. But you need to make that call, 353-9528.
You know, and I think it's also worthy to mention, Kevin, that First Coast Connect does not stay in the studio. The donations that you give to WJCT allows us to go on the road, on the go, and meet you where you are, like we do every day with the stories that we choose to cover. But we actually are out and going into the community, partnering with different businesses, partnering with different organizations to bring you the most up-to-date and most nuanced depictions of the most interesting issues of the day on the First Coast and nationally. We also have a new statewide political talk show, which Melissa Ross will be hosting a couple of episodes. We bring together the power of the network of NPR member stations all across the state and all across the country. But again, these partnerships are only possible with your financial support. So please give us a call at 904-353-9528 or online at wjct.org/thank you. Also worthy to mention that you can donate directly from Facebook. So if you have the Facebook app, you go on to the WJCT Facebook page and there is a support or donate button. You can also donate directly from the WJCT app, just another platform that was only created because of the support that we get from you as listeners.
Indeed. You can even just drop us a check. If you want to go old school, you can do that. write your check, drop it off to WJCT, put 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville 32202. Mail it to us. We'll send a confirmation back to you. And then you've done your part there as well. But whatever it is you want to do, that's what the main thing is. What is this programming worth to you? If it's worth $10 a month to bring you programs like First Coast Connect, then join the Sustainer at $10 a month. $10 a month off your credit card. You won't have to worry about it anymore. You'll know that it's always there. Now, the only one little thing about that is that even since last October, about 34% of the people became sustainers had managed to drop off. That's some reasons. Maybe you've changed your credit card or something like that, or you've changed banks and forgot to tell us. Well, if that's you, if suddenly that $10 isn't disappearing off your credit card anymore, then call us back and we'll set that up. You can go online and check your account just to make sure, and then we'll do it for you. It's going to be real easy. We do anything we can to make things easy for you. Give us a call, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or online at wjct.org, and thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Audie Cornish from NPR News, and the past few months have been filled with breaking news. Some of those stories have been pretty difficult to process. Attacks in Nice, Bangladesh, and Orlando. A military coup in Turkey. Britain's departure from the European Union, police shootings, and shootings of police. Behind these major headlines, beyond the politics and the analysis, are real people, lives forever altered by these events. In Turkey, following a failed military coup, the Turkish president cracked down on the country's armed forces, and through the chaos, we were there.
Military families come day after day to an Istanbul court in hopes of getting news about their sons, brothers, and husbands.
Vallahi çok üzgünüm de böyle giderse daha da kötü olacak. Benim iki oğlum var, ben ikisini de göndermeyeceğim aslında.
Saim says he's now reluctant to send his two other sons to the military.
When tragedy struck Nice, there were voices from the front line.
Flowers and teddy bears marked the places along the promenade where people were killed. But the spot where the attacker was shot and killed is marked by a pile of rocks. It helps me deal with the hatred and anger within me, she says.
And when tragedy struck in Orlando, it was the community who guided our understanding of what had taken place.
Bullets whizzed by patrons like Amanda Alviar, who recorded this sound on Snapchat before she was killed. Francisco Pabon and his friend were panicking on the club's patio.
I was like, oh, what happened? Oh my gosh, he like, oh my gosh, we need to get out, we need to get out.
In a historic vote, Britain decided to break from the European Union, and we spoke to people on both sides.
Young Spaniards, young Greeks, young Italians, where are they coming? They're coming here. Why are they coming here? Because they see where the jobs are.
And I must say, the day after the votes, and I was going into work, I felt awful. I felt unwanted. It was a really horrible feeling.
All these stories, these perspectives, they're only possible with your support. The time and effort we put into covering these events, the calm reporting, and community-based coverage can only happen because you make a contribution to this station today. Your investment in this station allows us to go where the story is happening and uncover the deeper narratives. So please, give what you can today. And thanks.
Indeed, thank you very much if you have called in and shown your support for the station. And if you haven't, now's the time to do so. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. That's 353-WJCT, or you can go online at WJCT.org. There's a little box in the corner, and it'll make it real easy for you as well. But make the call now before we head into Diane Rehm. You still have a few seconds, so give the call, 353-9528.
And, you know, Kevin, you were talking about a little bit earlier in the last break that we saw a 34% drop in the sustainers that we had signed up last pledge drive. But you know what? That's compared to a 30% increase in overall listeners to the station. So we know people are listening to us. We know that people are listening probably right now, and probably some of those people who lapsed in their sustaining of the station. And if you did, it could be for a number of reasons. And even if you can't at this moment sign up again to be a sustainer, a one-time gift also helps every little bit to get us to our goal of $72,000. We have a new total. We are at $8,490. We still have quite a ways to go. Please give us a call, 904-353-9528. We have some people to thank.
We do, real quickly. We'd like to thank the Shahar in Jacksonville, and Gwen in Fernandina loves the After Hours music, and Curtis in Jack's Beach. The company Deck the Chairs in Jack's Beach wants to ask you to show your support. So make that call now, and thank you. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528.
Janora in Jack's.
Thank you, Janora.
Thank you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.